Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 41 of Pepperdine People. I am Luisa Blanco, and I'm joined today by Dr. Scott Sumner. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Luisa. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm very excited about this podcast because I enjoy very much teaching about monetary system and monetary policy. I like to tell my students that I really think that the monetary system is very important for the well-functioning of the economy. In some way, I like to say that everything is about the monetary system and other things are complementary. And I say everything is about money and they think I sound a little superficial, right? But I really believe, right, that the monetary system is very important for the well function of the economy. And here, you know, so it's good that I'm talking to you because that's really your area of expertise. And I have these very important questions that I want to raise here with you in our conversation. So I was checking your blog, and I saw that a month ago, your blog, Money Illusion, you wrote about monetary policy. Well, you write about monetary policy a lot, right? But I saw you had something specific about what is good monetary policy. And then also you talk about how good monetary policy can lead into good non-monetary policy, right? So you mentioned good monetary policy can lead into good non-monetary policy
That's right.
Important for the function of the economy. So I'm very interested on you expanding on these.
Okay, thank you. As far as good monetary policy, my preference is that monetary policy focus on what's called nominal GDP, or the total amount of dollar spending in the economy. And over the last few decades, that has been rising about 5% a year. You could also call that national income. And that's about 3% real growth and 2% inflation. So totals about 5% nominal growth. And my argument is that if we keep nominal GDP growing at about 5%, then the business cycle will be less severe and we'll be less likely to do other policies that are not efficient but are sort of stopgap measures for helping. For instance, in the recent recession, we did a lot of intervention in the financial system, bailing out banks or agencies like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. We bailed out General Motors, Ford, this sort of thing. And these aren't really efficient in a free market economy. You'd like there to be losers who suffer the consequences of their mistakes.
Yes.
But what happens when the economy gets very bad is the government feels under enormous pressure to step in and try to intervene. So typically during periods of great economic stress like the Great Depression, the government becomes much more active in the economy. And personally, I think the economy does better in a free market sort of regime. And therefore, I favor policies that will promote nominal GDP growth at a steady rate so that we don't slide into these very statist policies. And one other quick example, in Latin America, I think this mistake was made in Argentina about 10 years ago, where policies that were deflationary tended to sort of discredit capitalism, make capitalism look bad. And it led to a backlash against free markets and a more left-wing government. So I'm trying to prevent that type of situation.
Yeah, and it seems right that nowadays the public really wants the government to do something about the business cycle, right? So we're moving into a different approach. So in your view, you want more like
steady growth.
And stay out of it.
And I might add that I think a lot of people partly misdiagnose the problem. I think there were two problems. The original subprime crisis, which I think people understood and saw correctly. But then it got much worse in late 2008 when we allowed nominal GDP to start falling. And that made a sort of like a cold turning into pneumonia. We were still treating it like a cold, but it had changed or morphed into a more serious problem requiring a more effective monetary policy. I think that wasn't really recognized. People thought we just had a worse cold instead of a different type of qualitatively different problem. That's when I started advocating monetary stimulus as an alternative to fiscal stimulus or deficit spending.
Oh, Very interesting. So we need to get better, right, at trying to figure out what's going on with the economy, right, and seeing the signs quicker and being able to take action faster.
Right.
So can you expand on what type of good non-monetary policies came out of good monetary policy?
Well, I think that with good monetary policy, governments are more willing to allow the market to work and firms that haven't been successful to fail.
So you have a better incentive system.
And also, I think fiscal policy tends to be better. We don't tend to rely on large deficits.
Oh, yeah.
As you'll notice, often our fiscal situation gets much worse when we have a downturn in the economy. Also at the state level, like in California, tax revenues tend to plunge when nominal GDP declines. And yet government spending has this upward momentum, so the deficit gets much worse. And so that's another sort of policy error I'm trying to prevent. Or putting it this way, a positive spin, I'm trying to promote a more stable fiscal policy that will hopefully encourage lower deficits, more national saving.
Great.
Through focusing on using monetary policy to, you know, steer the economy in terms of its nominal growth. I don't favor the use of fiscal stimulus as a way of getting out of recessions.
Very interesting view, because I think it's very relevant nowadays that we're start getting very worried about the national debt, right? The magnitude of our debt and our fiscal deficits. So it seems to be a very interesting approach to deal with that big problem that we're facing nowadays. So in your definition and your research and in your view, what grade would you give to the Fed based on their response to the financial crisis of 2008? So let's say in the last 2-3 years, you know, what grade would you give them if you were giving them a test?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because there's so many things they've done. I guess my focus is on the monetary policy as, let me put it this way. The Federal Reserve does both monetary policy and has a regulatory role.
Yes.
And so some of the things they did in late 2008, helping the financial system, were more really in the regulatory role. They weren't, you know, changing interest rates or the money supply necessarily. What makes it more complicated is these got mixed together. A lot of money was injected into the banking system, which I think, again, was misinterpreted. Many people feared high inflation. And they lost sight of the fact that the Fed was paying interest on these reserves, so that in practice, it wasn't really that expansionary because the money was held onto.
The banks were holding the money.
Holding the money.
Right?
They weren't moving it out into the economy. So if you look at it from the point of view of monetary policy, it looked expansionary, but it actually wasn't expansionary because of these two problems. One, the money was held onto. And the second is that interest rates are often an unreliable indicator of monetary policy. Let me explain what I mean by that.
Well, that's an interesting view.
Most people think low interest rates are easy money. End of story. Very simple. It's more complicated. When the economy weakens sharply, like in the Great Depression or more recently, interest rates tend to fall and often can fall towards zero. During the Great Depression, we originally thought the Fed was doing fine. They had cut interest rates. But later, economists like Milton Friedman and Anna Schwartz showed that actually money was too contractionary, and the interest rates were falling because the economy was weak, not really because monetary policy was expansionary.
Now, so the Fed was highly criticized because
it was
of
highly
that.
Criticized, and including by Ben Bernanke, who is a researcher on the Great Depression. This time around, I think we also made a little bit of that mistake, obviously not nearly as bad as the Great Depression, so I won't give the Fed an F, certainly, but maybe a C, because I think they missed an opportunity in late 2008 to do some unconventional techniques to boost the economy that would have allowed us to do less fiscal stimulus and more monetary stimulus. And I think it's partly because people are a little bit frightened of what they're not familiar with. And the Fed is used to working with interest rates as their tool.
Yes, and it's complicated for some people to understand the mechanism. Right.
And there's probably more than one mechanism. I happen to believe, like many monetarists, that it isn't just interest rates. It's also a wide variety of asset prices that are affected by policy.
Yes.
So even when interest rates fall to zero, a lot of monetarists would argue that you can do things like quantitative easing, or they could have reduced the interest rate they paid on reserves. I even suggested if in an emergency that could have made it slightly negative to encourage banks not to hold on to a lot of excess reserves. Put a negative interest rate on excess reserves. And the Bank of Sweden did that just a little bit. They had a quarter point negative rate on excess reserves. So
did it seem to work for them, I guess?
Yeah, Sweden did better than other European countries in terms of the recovery, a faster recovery from the recession. So there's also different targeting approaches where you try to shape expectation. Now, the Fed does probably implicitly do a little bit of inflation targeting. They don't have a formal legal inflation target like some countries, but it's believed that they're informally aiming for about 2% inflation.
Yes.
Another approach you can take is to do what's called level targeting, which means if you fall short of your goal, you try to catch up during the next year and have a little more stimulus, and yet you still maintain your average inflation rate at 2%. So there's policies that try to sort of shape expectations to create a view in the market that asset prices won't keep falling, because the fall in asset prices is often related to the recession itself and the fall in nominal GDP. So you want to create expectations which will make markets more optimistic. The best way for me to explain this to you would be the recent policy called Quantitative Easing 2, which was started in November 2010. I happen to believe that's what they should have done 2 years earlier, but let's put that aside. The effect of that was to boost stock prices, somewhat lower the dollar in the foreign exchange market, also somewhat boost inflation expectations, but not dramatically. Inflation expectations in the bond market are still fairly reasonable, about 2%. Before they did that, they were closer to 1% inflation expectations.
Oh. So that changed.
Now, that's looking out over 5 years using bond prices and bond yields. You can infer the inflation expectation from the bond market. So what they did is they created a little bit more of an optimistic business environment, and we don't yet know what the effects will be,
but that's very important, right? And we need to address confidence. And
exactly. That usually comes first, right? You need to get asset prices moving up generally before you see a later improvement in jobs and other indicators. But there has been some indication in the last 2 or 3 months of a pickup in real economic activity. There's a few signs like industrial production, retail sales, the unemployment rate has come down a little bit. It's too early to say, but usually the stock market is a leading indicator of real economic activity. Unfortunately, with so many shocks in the world economy, like the oil situation,
today,
it's really hard
yeah.
to predict exactly how it'll play out in 2011. But all we can really say is that markets are more optimistic than 6 months ago, and that's usually a precondition to getting a revival in activity, economic activity.
So from our conversation, I get that you think the Fed needs to be more creative.
More
right?
creative.
And respond quickly to,
exactly.
to
and,
the shocks.
And also, something I like to emphasize is more forward-looking. In other words, focus on expectations of where the economy is going. Are those adequate? The analogy I like to use is we rely a lot on historical data, which reflects the economy with a lag or delay. So it's like driving a car, looking in the rearview mirror to see if you're going off the road.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
You're going to lurch around. I want the Fed to sort of look down the road and aim for where they're going down the highway.
And the stock market, you think that will
help,
right? Or
my preference, in a perfect world, I would have the government create a nominal GDP futures market. But we don't have that. So one thing I talk about is what's called the TIPS spread, the difference between interest rates on index bonds and ordinary bonds. And the difference between those two interest rates is the market's expectation of inflation. So I don't know if you know about the index bonds are adjusted. They have a certain real interest rate, and then they have an inflation adjustment.
Yes, sir.
And if you compare the real interest rate on an index bond with a nominal interest rate on a regular bond, the gap is roughly the expected rate of inflation in the marketplace. So that's one variable the Fed can look at for its inflation expectations, which are very important for monetary policy, because they'd like to keep inflation expectations close to 2% going forward. And there was a lot of controversy last year when inflation drifted down a little bit below 1%. And people were confused because the Fed was saying, well, that's a little bit too low. And everybody was wondering, well, why would we want to create inflation? Inflation's a problem. And of course, in a sense, that's right. We don't want to create high inflation. And I would argue it's even misleading to say we want to create any more inflation. Inflation is, per se, is not a good thing. It would be more accurate to say the Fed believes that with healthy growth in the economy, that their definition of price stability is about 2% inflation. And so they feel like if inflation's falling to 1% or below, it's a sign of a weak economy. So it's not that so much that they want higher inflation per se, but they feel like a strong economic recovery is going to be associated with about 2% inflation. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah, very interesting. So we need to focus on price stability to see it as the goal of the Fed.
Yeah. And ideally, I would prefer nominal GDP as a growth to inflation. I think it's for complicated reasons, it's a better indicator of monetary policy and whether it's adequate for the economy's needs. But we're living in a world where most actual central banks rely on inflation. So I tend to talk about that, policy ideas in terms of inflation, mm-hmm. because that's what we're working with in practice.
Yeah, but the nominal, your view on nominal GDP is because it incorporates real GDP, what is going on with real GDP, and then what is going on with inflation, right?
Yeah.
And that tells us about where the economy is going. And
what it does is it picks up the idea of aggregate demand, and monetary policy is basically aimed at controlling aggregate demand. So I can give you an example. Normally, inflation targeting does fine, but if you have a very bad supply shock or even a very good supply shock, it will throw it off. If there's a bad supply shock and inflation rises, it's probably not a good idea to keep the overall inflation rate at 2% because all the non-oil prices would then have to fall to offset the rise in oil prices, mm-hmm. and that could put you in a recession. It's better to keep the sort of the total nominal spending, which is prices times output, growing a stable rate. The opposite occurs if you have a productivity boom, like due to improvements in technology. Then you might actually want inflation to fall a little bit.
Yes.
Because if you keep inflation stable, you might create a bubble. You might, pump so much money into the economy that you get either a housing bubble or a high-tech bubble or something like that. For both reasons, for positive and a negative supply shock, arguably nominal GDP better indicates whether monetary policy is appropriate than inflation, because inflation reflects both demand shocks and supply shocks.
Oh, yeah, very insightful. So I wish we had more time, but let me ask you this last question, really. And this is a question I have been struggling myself since the financial crisis hit and we saw the reaction in terms of monetary policy. We see that the Fed has taken an aggressive approach towards increasing the amount of money in the economy. As our conversation, initially it didn't really show into the economy because banks were hoarding the money, mm-hmm. right? And I got really worried about whether the Fed really has the tools to control the amount of the flow of money into the economy that can lead into these inflationary pressures. So I'm a little worried about whether when inflation hits, is the Fed really going to be able to control? And I want to get your insight on that.
That's a very good question. I happen to think that they do have the tools, especially if they take this forward-looking approach of watching inflation expectations in the bond market. Now, back in the 1970s, we were caught unaware by high inflation. We didn't have these bond market indicators. There was no index bond market, no way to observe day by day what inflation expectations were. Now we have a warning system where the Fed really has no excuse not to tighten. If inflation expectations rise above their goal, whatever it is, they should be able to tighten right away. Now, how can they do that? There's two ways they can do that. There used to be one way, which was to sort of reduce the money supply and raise interest rates to slow things down. But now with all this money that's been injected into the banking system, there's a worry that it might suddenly move out en masse into the economy. So they can raise the interest on reserve.
Do you see that as an effective tool for them?
If they use it aggressively, it is. There's always...
It needs to be aggressive, right? It needs to be a high interest rate.
It has to be high enough so that banks are better off holding onto the reserves than moving them into treasury securities and other alternative
investments.
Because
I was a little skeptical about that because they say, the business of banks is to lend out money, right? So it can work, but it needs to be high enough, right?
Right. And the other thing is, though, it is... You know, monetary policy in a technical sense is actually surprisingly simple. It's really just buying and selling bonds. So yeah. if you need to pull a lot of money out of the economy, you can do yeah. it quickly by selling a lot of bonds. Now, some people will argue against me and they'll say, well, the Fed would be worried about being disruptive or tightening too much. But if the assumption and the question is, well, what about the risk of high inflation? That risk is going to occur when we're having too much spending, too much demand, right? So the assumption is that they'll be able to tighten up without creating that problem.
Oh, because there is already too much demand.
If they were to raise interest rates dramatically right now, then it would be very controversial and it might cause a double dip recession.
Because we don't have the inflationary pressures yet.
Right. So, but I think that monetary policy can be adjusted for the needs of the economy, especially if it's a forward-looking policy, focusing where market expectations are and keeping them in line, because they're the early warning system to when there's a problem of too much demand or too little. You see it show up first in the asset markets like bond prices and interest rates.
And do you see the Fed taking the approach of forward-looking policy?
I think they're doing some of it because you hear Fed officials talk sometimes about the inflation expectations that are available in these index bond markets. So they're aware of it. From the beginning, when they injected the money, they did talk about the need for an exit strategy when the time arose. My complaint actually early on is that they were so focused on the exit strategy, they didn't actually focus on the need. And they were also lulled into thinking they had done more than they did because of what I mentioned earlier, the low rates aren't necessarily expansionary. And the money injection was sort of was frozen in the banks through this interest on reserve program. Mm. So in other words, the very same reason that the monetary stimulus didn't do a lot early on, the payment of interest on reserves held it there, is the same reason why I don't worry about it doing that much later. They can adjust the interest on reserve higher to essentially, again, prevent it from creating a lot of inflation. So I'm pretty confident if they're forward-looking that they'll be able to keep inflation at a manageable level.
Oh, great. Well, this makes me have more confidence on the Fed, so which is good. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me about monetary policies. It's been very nice talking about this.
Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.